You are listening to Punk News Podcast number 420. I'm just kidding. It's 418, but you'll see why in a second.
She was living in a single room with three other individuals. One of them was a male, and the other two, well, the other two were females. God only knows what they were up to in there. And furthermore, Susan, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised to learn that all four of them habitually smoke marijuana cigarettes. Reefers.
And it's legalization day in Canada. We've got a lot to cover on the Punk News Podcast. But first, I believe Adam White is celebrating prior to the podcast or during the podcast, Adam White legalization day. Does that mean that anybody can get weed at any time? Or is it like America in some states where you have to get a doctor's note? And that it's a joke, but you have to go to the doctor and say, "Doctor, I'm nervous." And the doctor writes you a note and you go and then you can get weed. What's the rule in Canada now?
Not just anywhere or anytime, John, but any place. Like if you walked out into your yard and like reached into, say, like a shrub in your garden, there'd be a bong in there.
Oh, wow. It's like Super Mario Brothers, but with bongs.
I know. It's amazing. Yeah. Today is legalization day. So it's actual legalization in that it's legal. It's not just for medical purposes or anything like that. The rule is, it varies from province to province, but I think generally you can have up to like 30 grams on yourself and that's not a problem.
How much is
and
that?
And you're
like,
allowed.
Like how big of a baggie is that?
I never interact with more than like five or six at a time. So
that's
a lot.
A bad stat.
To me, I'm sure I'm wrong, but to me, I'm picturing like one of those bags of cotton candy you'd get at the fair.
Oh, that's a lot. What if you had a Cheech and Chong giant joint? You know, that's like five, like a 2 meters long. Is that cool?
I really doubt anyone's going to care too much. The other thing that we can do is we can grow it. Like we can grow up the four plants at home. So there's that. But then the actual like rules vary from place to place to place. So in Ontario, you're allowed to smoke it in a private residence or anywhere outdoors that cigarettes are also legal.
Oh, wow. Like it's like Amsterdam. Weed's not even legal in Amsterdam. You're more legal than Amsterdam.
I think so. But the weird thing about that law, and this is such a weird thing to say, is so the cannabis legislation in Ontario was proposed by our previous provincial government, which was a Liberal government. And when they proposed the law, it was originally just like, okay, just indoors, like just in private residences, that's all you can do it. Or I suppose like private residence would mean like in your backyard or something, but like nowhere else than that. And then the conservative government that we have right now that's run by Doug Ford, which is the brother of the late Toronto mega mayor, Rob Ford. So Doug came in and of all the horrible dumb shit things that man has done, and he's done a lot of bad things, John. Like day one, he made a decision that screwed up my personal finances. It just, ugh.
Adam, were you like, now it's personal? Did you do
now
that?
Now it's personal. Yeah, it is. It is personal. But anyways, no, he, for whatever reason, and I think it's under the guise of like conservative deregulation of everything, but in this case, it's kind of good. They're like, no, you know what? If we're going to treat these like cigarettes, we're going to treat them like cigarettes. So it's not just legal in your house. It's legal where you go. So, you know, I suppose if you can walk down the street and smoke a cigarette, which you can walk down the street and smoke a joint or whatever. So that's pretty interesting from like a freedom standpoint in this area. The part that we're all waiting for full confirmation on is that the government needs to do something now about everyone that has convictions for possession. because that fucks their lives up and keeps them from getting certain jobs, screws them up trying to cross the border, all that kind of stuff, right? Outside of the actual being in jail part of it. And it looks like that's being announced today, which is good. I don't know if it's going to go as far as everyone wanted, but from what I saw, it was you could basically, with like no waiting period and no fee to pay, apply to have your what would it be, like your criminal conviction terminated?
It's called expunging a criminal record is what it's called.
Whatever, right? It's, you know, it never shows up. So that's now been announced today, and we'll see, because, you know, just like everywhere else, when we start jailing people for pot, it's always, you know, the browner people, we jail them. So we should probably not do that.
Adam, are you worried that you're going to go off on a bender now that weed's legal? Are you going to lose control and just become a maniac? Is it going to be Cheech and Chong except for it's Adam and Adam?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it costs, you know, the same, if not more, than it ever would have before now. So it's not like I have unlimited, like, money and time and nothing to do.
I thought weed was responsibilities. Pretty cheap. It's not cheap.
Well, no, it's not cheap. Like, to me, it's the same as what I was dealing with on the gray market, I guess. But the when you say gray market, when you buy it from your family member who's getting it from a medical thing, the what's it called? John.
Yeah.
I totally lost where I was going with this.
I have an idea why.
I do too. Yeah, I'm pretty high right now. Okay. We were talking before the show, and I was just complaining about the bands that we're not going to talk about, and then I was just going on these weird tangents, but I could hear myself going down these tangents, and I'm just like, John, just start the show.
Adam, you want to talk about that person we were talking about before the show started? Because it was somewhat of an interesting conversation.
No. We'll come back around to that when we have like when that particular band appears in the talk.
Well, listen, in the news. I got a mini rant. First of all, I saw Public Image last night. Public Image, it was real cool. It was live, and he basically did all like the old school tracks, and of course he did Rise and what's the other Poppy song? This is not a love song, Poppy in the Pill context, but it was basically like all the old grinders, man. Death Disco, Flowers of Romance, like the real whompers, you know, the real heavy stuff. And it was cool.
Did they play Religion again? I feel like they did when I saw them in Toronto a couple years ago, and like it was like, God, it was like 12 minutes long.
They did not. They actually did an extended version of some song by a band called Left Field that I guess Lydon was a part of, and they did Public Image. So they, like, the encore was this huge one extended track. They did Public Image, then a song by a band called Left Field, which I didn't know about, and then Shoom, and it was like an extended 20-minute sequence. It was real cool. It was extremely bass-heavy, extremely drum-heavy. Lydon sounded fantastic. One thing I got to address real quick is everyone's seen that, I think it's Daily Mirror or something, like some English paper says, look at John Lydon, he's fat now. You know, as if that even matters. I mean, he's not Taylor Swift. Like, he never, pitched himself as like a beauty, you know, icon of beauty. Those pictures.
He's also what, like a 65-year-old man or something. Like, Adam, let him be.
Those pictures are heavily doctored. I was like in the pictures, he looks like he's ready to die. You know, like he looks really big. He's not. He's maybe a little bigger than he was like 5 years ago, but not. I mean, he's 65. You know, like if you saw him walking down the street and it wasn't John Lydon, you'd be like, that's a 65-year-old guy that's got a little extra because he's 65. Like, it's so weird and cruel. Like he's not. I don't know why this matters to people, but it was fake. He's not nearly as big as those pictures make him out to be. He's about half as big as he's not that big. I'm just saying, Adam. You know what I mean? It's weird.
I saw the pictures, and I didn't delve too far into them. But I was genuinely shocked when I saw them, because that did not. I mean, he seemed old when you know, older when I saw him last, but not, you know, he didn't seem like he was like he had a medical problem.
Yeah.
So those pictures that are floating around are, yeah,
they're heavily doctored. I think they basically took them and stretched them out widthways. Like, yeah, he's not skinny Johnny Rotten from 1976, but I mean, he's not that big. They're just fake pictures. Anyways, Pill was real cool. It was very abrasive. It wasn't like snappy. It was Pill, It did bum a lot of the audience. Not a lot, but some of the audience was kind of bummed out because it was heavy and abrasive. But, I mean, it really just underscored the fact that how punk rock John Lydon is. Like, he's so unique. You know, he could have just done Sex Pistols for 50 years. He didn't do that. Instead, he did this very unique, weird music that nobody sounds like it. And it's purposely aggressive and combative. And it's just awesome. And he's the real deal, Adam. He really is the real deal.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised when I saw them how like drum and bass heavy the show was, but like in a really good way, because it really drew the line between what I think what a band like Pill could do in punk's wake by being something else, right? By being something post-punk, like compared to what you just expect by seeing, you know, a band with, you know, a normal kind of guitar bass drum setup. Like it was almost like being at a dance club when I saw Pill. Like it just, everything was just thumping. So, you know, it's a cool way to differentiate them from just like doing kind of any old rock show.
Yeah, I mean, yes, I agree. I just love how damaging it was. It was damaging. Anyways, it was cool. Go see Pill if you have the chance. I sent Adam White this video, and I wanted to talk about this. This is not related to punk, but we're going to wrap it back around to punk rock, actually. Kanye West and Lil Pump put out a video called I Love It. And if you haven't seen the video, it's actually like, I don't think it's the most watched video on YouTube, but like under one of their metrics, it got the most watches in like a week. It's up to like 250 million views, which that's a lot of views. So it's one of the biggest videos on YouTube. It's Kanye West and Lil Pump doing a song called I Love It. And in the video, it's got Kanye and Lil Pump in basically a Klaus Nomi or David Byrne giant jacket, you know, giant suit jackets, walking down a hallway. On the hallway, there's women that are either mannequins or look like they're bound and gagged, and they're walking behind Adele Givens, the comedian. Due to the perspective in the video, it looks like Adele Givens is like much bigger than Kanye and Lil Pump. The lyrics are completely banal and vulgar in that the entire lyrics are, you're such an effing whore, I love it. That's all Lil Pump says the whole song. He sings it over and over. You're such an effing whore, I love it. And then at one point he just goes, F shit, like over and over and over. And Kanye does two quick verses and that there's nothing to them. And he basically just says, you know, I'm a sick F, I like a quick F. Like his rhymes are very, 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 very banal and rudimentary, almost like a fourth grader would write or something, that like to curse. I this video, Adam, caused me to think a great deal about a lot of things. One thing, I mentioned this on the podcast, and I'm gonna kind of go over my spiel, Adam, and you can respond. You watched the video, right, Adam?
I watched the video,
John. Okay. So in the video, I've discussed this before in hip hop. Like in punk rock, if you say anything that's even remotely sexist or isn't sexist but could be interpreted as being sexist, you get run out of the scene. The same people that run these punk rockers out of the scene salute a lot of these hip-hop guys. Like I remember Lil Yachty, all the cool punk rockers or the cool indie people, they were like, oh, Lil Yachty's the greatest. Meanwhile, Lil Yachty had very sexist lyrics, extremely sexist lyrics. But like, oh, well, he got a free pass because he was hip-hop. I love hip-hop. Everyone knows I love hip-hop. But I thought that was very, what's the word I'm looking for? Hypocritical. Now, one way you could counter this video is in the video, you could say, well, Kanye and Lil Pump, they're not portraying Kanye and Lil Pump. They're portraying bad actors, just like Jello Biafra is a bad actor in Police Truck. And you could also argue that's exemplified by the fact that Kanye and Lil Pump are small and Adele Givens is big and she looks at them and kind of scowls at them and they kind of look like they've been naughty little boys and are ashamed of themselves. So you could argue that Kanye and Lil Pump are kind of portraying characters and aren't themselves, except for you can't argue that, at least for Lil Pump, because Lil Pump has dozens of other songs just like this where he's clearly portraying himself. He's like, oh, I bang bitches, I do this to bitches, I do blah 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 blah. Like that's all Lil Pump is. So you can't make that argument for him. For Kanye is on the fence, and he's got some songs where he does do that, and he's got some songs where he portrays characters. So I don't think you can get them out of this banal, vulgar track that way. Another issue is, what did I want to say? Oh, Lil Pump. Like, Lil Pump is a gigantic hip-hop star right now. He's only, like, 17. He's one of these rappers that has, like I think he's Latino, or he's half Latino, half white. You see a lot of these rappers right now, like Post Malone, who is white. They're white rappers or non-African-American rappers that have, like, face tattoos and stupid haircuts. And they look like jokes. And they're, like, 16 or 17. And they have, like, these really offensive lyrics and these gangster lyrics, but it's all fake. Like, they're not gangster at all. Like they're 15 or 16. They're not gangster. And in the 80s, you know, you had these, like, fake, like, R&B guys come out, and the real rappers just, and even the fans just kind of blew them out of the water. Like when all these, they would call them, like, dance R&B guys came out, Ice-T, Ice Cube, Public Enemy, KRS-One, they would just go to town on these guys and just annihilate them because it's fake and phony and is bullshit. You know, it's marketing. It's fake marketing being used to sell a product. Ice-T, Ice Cube, KRS-One, Public Enemy recognize that and attack that and kind of defeated that kind of stuff in the late 80s and early 90s. Soulja Boy came out in, you know, 2010, 2009, and he was kind of the latest iteration of that. Ice-T took him out for that, but then after Soulja Boy, we saw guys like Lil Yachty and now Lil Pump, all these guys that are completely manufactured, not gangsta, 17, 16, 17, and not talented, and not saying anything unique. Rather, they're repeating things that have been repeated millions of times before, only in the most vulgar fashion. Except for when we don't see the real rappers taking them out, and we don't see the audience kind of rejecting them. We see the audience embracing them, and we see guys like Kanye embracing them, which blows my mind. So, Adam White, two questions. First, why are these totally manufactured, record company-designed rappers embraced now instead of being taken out, you know? B, why is the audience accepting it? C, and I think this is the most important thing. Well, this I think you'll agree this track is extremely vulgar, and I don't think there's very little art to it whatsoever. The lyrics have no art. It's pure vulgarity. Why have we descended to a vulgar society where this is just absolute garbage, and we are willing to consume garbage because we have lost our sense of intelligence? But Adam, I got to tag on something onto this, and I don't think this is the case, but I fear this may be is the case. We were talking about when the Sex Pistols came out, the Sex Pistols enraged English society. It enraged, you know, like, middle-aged people. It enraged, you know, conservative people. Like, people hated the Sex Pistols are obscene. The Sex Pistols are vulgar. The Sex Pistols are the bottom barrel of humanity. And as we know now, Sex Pistols were very intelligent, very clever, and very important in engaging art. Adam White, this Kanye Lil Pump video, I hate it. But is this punk rock, and is there an intelligence there? Is it punk rock in that, not that it's punk rock, but is it achieving the same thing punk rock achieved in 1976, and am I missing it? That's the real question.
This was the ultimate in John asks a six-part multiple choice question in an audio format.
On Canadian Legalization Day, nonetheless.
On Canadian Legalization, yeah. Okay, here's what we're going to do. I don't think you can equate this with being punk rock, just in that Kanye, for all of his more weirder than usual weirdness these days, is the mainstream, right? Like, he's coming from the middle. He's a person that, you know, sells however many records is millions of records these days, because I don't know who buys things like tens. He sells tens of records, but he commands the culture, right? He, you know, the things that he does in his personal life, offstage, having nothing to do with art, you know, drive news organizations and drive, you know, social media memes and all this shit, right? So he's coming right from the middle. So him being more vulgar or, you know, trying to cross that line doesn't seem like it's challenging anything, because I don't know what you feel that the person that's going to be challenging is going to be somewhat punching up, not in terms of social, but like in terms of stature, like coming from nowhere and punching up. I don't think you can come from being central figures at the middle of the culture and and shake things up in that way. So I'm not giving it punk rock. I want to agree with you that this is really super horrible and I hate you for making me watch it, but I'm worried that I'm missing a giant chunk of context here and maybe I shouldn't, you know, put on my old man hat and complain about it until I fully understand that, which is to say that, John, I don't know if I've ever heard a Kanye West song before.
Well,
so this is probably one of my first. So, I don't think it's that hard to, you know, to have lived a life where you haven't listened to a Kanye West song before. John, I'm a busy person. I only have so much time for shit. So the things that are just going on in the rest of culture outside my little weird corners, I don't even know what's happening.
Hey, you're only the most famous North American musician of the last 10 years, Adam. I'm just saying.
No, I know that, right? And I know that a lot of the stuff that he has released has, you know, the various you know, credible music critics of the world praising it and all this kind of stuff, right? Not at all, you know, trying to take that away. I just, you know, I have two kids and there's only so much Adam to go around. So in any case, I don't want to talk about too much about like how this is really super bad, because maybe given the general artistic thrust of Kanye's career and the other individuals involved, everyone that's guesting in this video, you know, having them all in that place in that time, singing that stupid song, you know, makes more valid artistic sense than I would want to judge it as. So I'm gonna punt on that.
Well, listen.
My natural instinct is that this is the worst thing ever, and I hate you. But you know, we'll. I'm gonna punt on that. But hold on, I actually remember your earlier questions here. I'm doing the full multiple choice. Mm-hmm. So then you were asking, why do their fans allow someone like Lil Pump, who does not have the level of credibility that you feel he should,
yes,
just show up and exist alongside people that do? Whereas in past eras, they would have been sniped down by
KRS.
Gatekeepers. By KRS. Yeah. I think that this is the same answer almost as why this isn't punk. Is, I think Kanye's too, I think he's too central. I mean, I don't think it's up, I don't think it's to him to do the sniping. Like, he has been co-opted by the big mushy middle. Like, he doesn't exist so much as a musician, but as a weird expression of, you know, modern day popular culture for all of its, you know, good and ill. So I don't know. I don't think that he gets to be like the hip hop credibility gatekeeper. Do you? But again, I don't really know too much.
I don't think Kanye does, but I guess I'm more concerned is why is everyone saying, oh, this is great? I mean, people aren't necessarily, this video is controversial as it was designed to be, obviously. But like Post Malone is considered to be a famous and well-regarded R&B/rapper. So is Lil Pump and a lot of these little guys, you know. Why are people accepting this garbage? Why? Is it because marketing is so powerful now? Is it because people are dumber than they used to be? Or am I missing something? But I don't think I am, because I love Run the Jewels. And Run the Jewels is not this, and Run the Jewels is awesome. You know what I mean? So I don't think it's that I don't understand hip-hop. I think it's that society, I mean the example I've drawn before, and I stand by, one way to gauge the power, influence, and strength of the Egyptian empire is to examine the art. And the cruder the art is, the weaker the empire is, and the more likely that they are to be taken control of by invaders. And that without question, follows the line. Same with the Roman Empire. Same with many of the Greek city-states. I worry, Adam, that this is basically vulgar art that shows a decline in Western intelligence and understanding and thoughtfulness. That's what I think, and that's what I think it is. I think it's a descent into vulgarity. Am I the new Pat Robertson? Adam, are you there?
Yeah, sorry. Skype is being horrible. You just started the garble up, so I decided to just let you finish your "Is this the decline of Western society?" rant until the garble stopped, and then I was going to jump back in, which was I did too late. Sorry, that was actually Skype, not drugs. So
is it the decline? Yeah, sometimes of Western the problems are Skype. Is it the decline of Western civilization, Adam? Is it the true decline of Western civilization?
Oh God! Is Kanye's stupid video the decline of Western civilization? There are so many other big fat orange canaries in the coal mine that are pointing to the decline of Western civilization that I don't know if Kanye gets that much power. I don't attribute him that much power.
Well, fair enough. Well, listen, I encourage the listeners to watch this video and don't just take the knee.
Yeah, they need more clicks.
I am surprised about the number of punk rockers that take the hip hop is stupid. Like hip hop is amazing and awesome, but this video is not. And I want you to check this video and tell me your thoughts. Meanwhile, let's reach into the mailbag. You can always reach that podcast at punknews.org. Adam, we have two things that are directly on point punk rock wise. Let's bring it back to the punk world. This is from Ernest. No, I'm sorry. Erbest. E-R-B-E-S-T. Erbest. I was listening to the podcast where you talked about third wave ska and the possibility of fourth wave ska. I think I figured out why third wave ska isn't taken seriously. Second wave ska, like the Specials and the English Beat, focused on social issues and also paid tribute to the Jamaican influence. Third wave ska bands were more interested in having a good time and worse totally ignored the Jamaican ska that created their very sound. How many covers of dumb 80s songs were there compared to versions of Johnny Too Bad? Third wave ska is considered a joke, and that is the fault of the band themselves. From Erbest, or maybe Ernest.
Third wave ska suffers in my mind, and I think he was touching on this, because it let itself get fucking goofy. Like, it had no, like, you need the part of the music scene that is going to take itself too seriously. And then you can have people that are going to be super goofy, and it all sort of balances itself out. And, you know, you can look at rock, and for every, you know, Dead Milkmen that you had being goofy, you had, you know, all these Discord bands over here being really fucking serious about it, right?
I attack that analogy, that syllogism, if you will, because the Dead Milkmen do have funny songs, but they also have very serious songs. I don't think that's fair to label them a goofy band.
They're a goofy band, John.
No, I mean,
they have. I'm not saying they're exclusively a goofy band, but I'm saying like they get goofy. If you were to ask the average grandma on the street, you know, do you think the Dead Milkmen is goofy? They'd probably say yeah. That's okay. I'm letting them wear that as a badge of pride. But in any case, you had, you know, you got both. Third Wave Ska, I feel like, had like majority goof, like right out the gate. You look at like the first, like those first like Third Wave Ska songs that started to break really hard in what, 97?
Oh, I was at 95.
95? Yeah, like I guess it was sort of at its peak in 97, right? Like, a lot of them were either goofy or, like, if they did take themselves serious, they were so wearing the trappings of something that bigger society felt goofy that it was just considered that, too. You look at, Rancid's Time Bomb was one of the early ones, right? That was big. And, you know, the Time Bomb video, I look at it and I'm like, this video is so cool. But it's, you know, look at it from the outside and it's really fucking goofy. Rancid is a goofy looking band. They wear all this goofy punk rock stuff. You know, the ska kids in this all look silly. And then that was about as serious as it ever got. Like right out the gate, bands like, say, like Real Big Fish or, you know, Goldfinger, when they were an early ska band, like it was just like goofiness up and down. It was silly. So then it was really easy for everyone to dismiss it as a joke when, oh, you know, all these bands are, you know, Scott-O-Matic Weapons and... That was a band that was up here. But, you know, like bands using ska in their name in a goofy way. It just was too silly.
The nine bands called the Ska Flaws.
Oh, yeah. I was trying to make a bunch of ska puns that I feel like I can't. I feel like making fun of vape shops has taken over as my new way to make puns. I have no more mental space for ska puns.
The funny thing is
puns, that's where it's at.
If you watch the Time Bomb video, it's so weird because the band looks like such babies. They look like babies. It's like, wow.
You know? Tim looks like he's 16 in that. Yeah.
This is from Jen, who's written in at least a couple of times, at least once before, but I think a couple of times. On the episode, you talked about how much money the Misfits are making in the reunion and how it was somewhat unexpected. If the Ramones broke up in the 90s but were still living, do you think that reunion would be as big? Who would play in the band? Specifically, which drummer? From Jen.
I feel like that wouldn't be as big. Not for any influence reason, but is at least a part of the Misfits fervor here driven by the fact that they've like merchandised themselves out to be this big cartoony cultural phenomenon? Like can you actually say that like the Danzig reunion with the Misfits is bigger because of the years of Jerry only selling bobbleheads and things like that? I feel like it might be.
But there's a billion Ramones t-shirts.
Like if you were to compare that to Ramones, like, yeah, but like the Ramones items are simple, right? It's like it's like a food staple, you know.
Yeah.
You flour and sugar and rice and a black t-shirt with the Ramones logo on it, right? Like you aren't going to a toy store and where you could buy like 25 different Misfits things. I feel like the Misfits, you know, spent more years in the wilderness, like making themselves into some weird cross, like even outside of punk brand name that people knew. Like there was probably a good amount of people that lived in like, I don't know, like dumb 90s stoner culture or like new metal culture or fucking juggalos or whatever that all knew the Misfits and that all would have also been excited for them to return along with the punks. I feel that like if the Ramones went away for a while and then they came back, it would be too clean and conventional of a return. Like the people would be excited were the people that were into, you know, into like mainstream rock music, but it wouldn't have this like whole weird circus aspect to it. And I think that circus aspect drives people in.
Well, there you have it. Speaking of circus aspect, Adam, let's play his tune. Do you have a tune picked out, Adam?
I got a bullet in my
Because you
bullet in my holster, John. Is that where you put bullets? Holsters.
Should we play all 420 friendly songs this podcast? You think?
No, I don't think we should because they're all obnoxious. Let me see what I got.
Let's see what Adam's got in his bandolero.
Yeah, I'm gonna play something that is punk rock because you talked about the history of hip hop for like 45 minutes earlier and all the people are mad. So there's a band from London, Ontario called Isolation Party that they write the O with a umlaut over it. So I don't even know if that is grammatically correct or just something I think looks cool. But anyways, Isolation Party, they sound like a ton of the bands that I would have obsessed over when I was like the early years of punk news, like 2003, 4, 5, not 1990, right? In those eras, I spent so much time trying to get into what I perceived as being Pacific Northwest power pop and garage. So stuff that Dirt Nap Records and labels like that were releasing, bands like The Briefs or the late Exploding Hearts and those types of bands. Basically, these American bands that were just ripping off the Buzzcocks and the Undertones in the most loving way. Well, Isolation Party sounds like that. So they're not really doing anything new if you want to approach them from that standpoint, but who cares? It's this great, amazing, vein of punk rock that's been going on for like 40 years and is just so, so bright and high strung and great. So anyways, this is a song from Isolation Party. It is called Pointing Fingers. It's off a full length that they have coming out on November 10th on No Front Teeth Records, which is a UK label. And the record is called Fiber Optic Holiday. So anyways, this is Isolation Party with Pointing Fingers.
And that was Isolation Party doing pointing fingers. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Adam. We're back. Take it away.
John, I feel like everything I'm saying on the show is stupid. It's great. Okay. We have do you want to do our Dead Kennedys block, or do you want to talk about this RSD thing?
Yeah, we can do Dead Kennedys block. It ties together. Maybe we'll come back to Record Store Day, but as part of Record Store Day,
we will. But the people are all amped up because of my cool punk song, so they want to keep going. So we're going to listen to we're going to talk about the Dead Kennedys first. So, is there a chronological order to these that you want to take them in? I feel like the Jello one maybe should go very last.
Okay, yeah, that'll be a nice contrast to the story right before it. Sure.
So, all right. So, first of all, the Dead Kennedys are going to be as part of – actually, John, this ties right into our Record Store Day. So, there you go. As part of the Record Store Day Black Friday that is coming up, the Dead Kennedys were going to be releasing – a record called The Iguana Studios Rehearsal Sessions. So these were recordings from 1978, right before the band recorded Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables. And it's going to include an original, it includes the original band. So Jello, East Bay Ray, Claws of Fluoride, Ted, and 6025. Notably, there's going to be several unreleased songs and drastically different versions of released songs on there, including Dreadlocks of the Suburbs, Cold Fish, Kidnap, and Munitions of Today. So a lot of this material has been available for some time pretty widely as a bootleg, but this is its first official release. So that's coming out on Manifesto Records. And so then also the band is heading out on tour. This time out, they are going to have Ron Skip Greer on lead vocals. John, I'm blanking on who Ron Greer is. Should I know who that is?
Wynonna Ryder's singer. Skip McSkipster.
Okay. So not necessarily someone that I would have immediately jumped on. Anyways, they'll be playing North American shows. Just a couple. Northern California, actually. I don't know why I read that as North American. It's because of where the hyphen was. Hyphens are important, John. They're going to be playing in Sacramento on December 8th. Berkeley on December 9th. The Sacramento date with TSOL, The Dwarves, MDC, The Moans, and Twitch Angry. All The Dwarves, MDC, but this time with Screaming Bloody Marys. So two Dead Kennedys dates with Ron Skip Greer on vocals are coming up in December, and they have this Black Friday Record Store Day sessions thing coming out. Jump right from the Dead Kennedy story into the Jello Biafra story. And there's quite a contrast in levels of fucking weirdness.
Okay, so John, though, the Dead Kennedys, though, Adam, that's their, quote, 40th anniversary shows.
Yes. They are. I may not have mentioned that. John, talk about furries. Come on.
Okay, well, in contrast to the Dead Kennedys who are saluting their past, Jello Biafra is going boldly into the future. He's going to DJ a furry dance party at San Francisco's. I think it's the biggest gay nightclub in San Francisco, or one of the biggest. It's which club? Oh, the Eagle in San Francisco. It's a very famous gay dance club in San Francisco. And Jello Biafra is going to be DJing a furry party. And of course, what's a furry? A furry is a person that dresses up in, I don't know how to describe. I guess most people know what furries are, but you basically dress up as like a Muppet, I guess, or like a furry version of as a mascot. You look like a mascot, basically. And Jello Biafra is going to be DJing that party, and I just think that's how quintessentially Biafrian is it for Jello to be DJing a furry dance party while the Dead Kennedys, the quote Dead Kennedys, without Jello on vocals, are celebrating their 40th anniversary and doing all songs from 40 years ago. Adam, one person is striding boldly into the future, and another set of people are living in the past.
All right, you could phrase that totally differently. And I wanted to get through all these stories before we commented on them here, because I think they go well together. You could argue that one of them is going to be playing a fun rock show, and the other one is gonna wedding DJ a weird fetish thing.
I would counter that I would counter that Jell-O does do his own shows as Jell in the Guantanamo School of Medicine. So if this was all Jell-O was doing, it would undercut his legacy. But Jell-O's always been down for the wacky project. So he's got a kick-ass punk band that is phenomenal. And he's doing these weird, goofy, strange things. And the one thing with the Furries always say, it's not sexual. It's not sexual. We do it because it makes us feel good about ourselves. But, like, isn't a dance party inherently, like, hookup culture? Like, isn't that what a dance party is? I feel as though I question the legitimacy of Furry culture, to tell you the truth. I don't know if that's bad for me to say, but I do. But I mean, if there's Furries out there, write in to tell me why I'm wrong. I mean, I'm not trying to harsh anybody's mellow. But they're always like, it's not, being a Furry is not sexual, but this is incredibly sexual, I think, like a nightclub dancing as a Furry. But also, like, wouldn't it be really, really hot inside those costumes and in a dance club, which is hot to begin with? Wouldn't this be like the smelliest, nastiest thing in the world? Like, wouldn't this be foul?
I love that you're trying to figure out the actual, like, on the ground logistics of being a Furry Rhodes has thought about this. I feel that I should not comment about furries because I'm not worried about offending anyone or trampling on, you know, trampling over the cultural acceptance of some different sexual norm or anything like that. I as a child, as a little kid, was really scared of mascots and like people in costumes at, like, you know, if you went to Disney and Mickey Mouse is walking around, all that stuff terrified me for a long time. And I feel like I can't inherently trust any of these furry people. They might come after me and try to destroy me.
Do not get high and go to this party.
So John, I don't want to make him mad.
Do not get high. Holy fuck,
John. I would not want to get high and go to that party. Yeah. My main understanding of furries comes from, what was it? Let's see. The October 30, 2003 episode of CSI, the fifth episode of their fourth season, which was called Fur and Loathing. That was a furry-themed episode of a cop drama that tried to treat it. It treated it in the same way that, what was that show from the... From like 1977 that had punk rock on it. It was like a lawyer show or something.
There was a Donahue.
No, there was. Oh God, there is. Liverpool Neil would know this. Hold on here.
Well, in the meantime, Adam, if you lived in San Francisco.
No, this is really important. It was on.
The Young Ones.
No, there was a show, and I'm trying to remember what it was called. It wasn't. It was like Matlock or Perry Mason kind of thing, right? But I forget what show it was, but they had like punks on it back in the late 70s or the early 80s when no one outside of, you know, punk rock culture really understood punk rock culture. So it was just like horrifying cartoony version of punks, like actors that didn't understand the subculture either, but understood, like, you know, spiky hair and safety pins and stuff like that. You know, they're going to, you know, they're all going to be in the show. I got it. It was Quincy, John.
Oh, Quincy.
There was an episode of Quincy Emmy from, what was the exact one, that aired on December 1st, 1982, in the middle of Quincy's final season. And the episode was called Next Stop Nowhere. And basically, the plot in it just involves, like, you know, the antagonists are punks, but... like the goofiest, you know, early 80s Hollywood understanding of what punk rock was. So in a way, that episode of CSI is like that for furry culture. What I'm trying to say, John, is that furries are the new punk rock.
Adam, would you go to this if you lived in San Francisco?
I would not go to a furry thing, John. I've already expressed that I think they're going
to
kill me.
I would love to see Jell-O. I'm a big fan of Jell-O, and I love seeing Jell-O in wacky situations. You know what I mean? Even though there's basically like a Jimmy Fallon episode come to life. You know, what if we had Jell-O doing furry dance party? You know, I would go to this, and I would. Yeah,
What would you do? You'd get there. You would see Jell-O DJing. You would appreciate some of the music. But then you would be taken out of that by the fact that you'd gaze across the room into the dead eyes of a giant sexy mouse that then starts advancing towards you. You don't want to be there.
You know what this is, Adam? This is a great third date. Like you would take a girl or a guy or whatever. You say, let's go to something hilarious and weird. And you would go for like 45 minutes and then you would bail and go somewhere else. That's what this is.
Especially if you want to be killed. So, do we have any opinion on the dead Kennedys end of this that doesn't involve furries?
I do.
I expended so much of my punk news youth being alternatively mad at the dead Kennedys or feeling bad that I've been so mad at the dead Kennedys and that maybe I shouldn't always be on Team Jell-O just reflexively. And just like there was so much drama about that. But I feel that like ever since Jell-O stopped fighting them in public, it's not something that I can get angry about anymore. So, you know, the dead Kennedys can, you know, the rest of them, whoever's calling themselves dead Kennedys, you know, they can go do their thing, play their show, have whoever sing, as long as they're ever happy.
Yeah, well, listen, I mean,
do you get mad at it?
Do I get mad at it?
Does it make you angry? But is it the kind of thing that you would scoff at in the same way? Because remember when the Dead Kennedys were touring with, I don't remember if it was Brandon Cruz or Jeff Penalty at the time, and they started re-releasing the records that they had won the rights back to in a court case on, was it on the same label that they're doing this new one on? Right, they started like re-releasing stuff at Alternative Tentacles. Yeah, Manifesto, right? Right when those reissues started coming out, you know, they were still publicly feuding with Jell-O about, you know, unpaid royalties or whatever they were accusing of at that time. That back then it felt, you know, I could feel the fire in my belly about complaining about who's singing for the dead Kennedys or whatever, or that the dead Kennedys are even a thing without Jell-O. But now, I don't know.
Well,
live and let live.
I don't know if I agree with you. Living, I mean, I'm not going to go out of my way to say that, you know, I'm not going to lose any sleep over this, you know, but I do think it's not the dead Kennedys without Jell-O. And I think calling it the 40th anniversary is disingenuous. I mean, they were broken up for what, 20 years or whatever. So is that really the 40th anniversary? And the fake dead Kennedys have been a band longer than the real dead Kennedys. If they just call themselves something different, I would say this is totally cool. You know, like they did for a while, East Bay Ray was doing the same thing as East Bay Ray. And it was cool when I went. I really enjoyed it. But the fact that they're calling it dead Kennedys, you could argue, A, they're just trying to make more money, or you could be them arguing that the dead Kennedys is not just Jell-O. And I agree the dead Kennedys is not just Jell-O, but Jell-O is a huge part of that band. And so I think it's disingenuous. It is kind of living in the past, and it just leaves a bad taste in my mouth, and I think it's kind of cheap and cheesy. And I don't recommend people go see it. If people want to go see it, that's fine. I not that big of a deal. If you want to go and have fun, go and have fun. I actually think it's even less genuine than the Jerry Only Misfits, to tell you the truth. Well, I don't know. That was only one misfit, but they agreed that it was cool for him to do that to a degree. Whereas Jell-O says they should not do it, but they do it anyways. So I think maybe the Jerry Only Misfits is more genuine just because Danzig was not out there saying Jerry Only shouldn't go do it. Where Jell-O was saying the dead Kennedys shouldn't go do it. So yes, I think Jerry Only Misfits was a little bit more genuine, and that wasn't the Misfits. This is not the dead Kennedys. It's three of the dead Kennedys doing dead Kennedy songs with a new singer. It's nothing to get too upset about, but it bums me out. I don't want to see it. And at this point, I don't even want to see Jell-O rejoin the dead Kennedys. I want to see Jell-O and the Melvins. Or Jell-O in Guantanamo School Medicine. I don't want to see Jell-O in the dead Kennedys. And I think it's cheesy and just pointless. I think it's pointless. It's why? You know, why? It is nostalgia. It's pure nostalgia.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, I get the pointlessness of it. It's just that whenever I want to accuse it of being pointless, I feel like I'm telling people to don't go have fun. And I don't want to be that guy.
Yeah, well, if you want to have fun, go and have fun. I agree, go and have fun. But
yeah,
but
like as long as and I think we're past the point, but as long as people aren't showing up and packing into those shows because they understand that this is a Jello Biafra thing, like as long as they're never being bamboozled about that, then, you know, the guys in the band are having fun. They're entitled to go play this music. They might be legally entitled to use the name, but whatever. That's not my fight. And, you know, the people going to the show, I assume, are there because they want to be there. So I don't want to, you know, if they want to go have fun, go have fun. I'm cool.
You know what enrages me, Adam, is there's still like jerks on like Facebook to be like, I went and it sucked. Jello wasn't even there. And the same thing happened with Flag and Black Flag. People went to see like Flag and they were like, Henry wasn't even there. They went to see Black Flag and they're like, you know, who's this new singer? Like it's just some guy. It's like, I have a suspicion that 97% of these people know what they're getting into before they go. And for the other 3%, the internet exists. I mean, like, how do you live in such a cave that you don't know that, like, Jello hasn't been to Dead Kennedys for 30 years, that Flag and Black Flag are too, like, it really annoys me that people, like, are willfully oblivious is what it is.
I think that there's a degree to where a lot of people are willingly oblivious, but there's also, I think, like a big portion of the population that just doesn't consume music in a way where they would necessarily get the story at all. And what I'm comparing this to is like I remember having a conversation with someone at like a work Christmas party kind of thing that I was at, and we were chatting about what we do, and I probably mentioned that I do stuff for Punk News. And then, you know, this person was maybe about 15 years older than me. And they're like, oh, like punk. Like, yeah. Like, you know, I was a big fan of the Dead Kennedys when I was a kid, or, you know, and then it was like, oh, I saw them a little while ago. You know, they played this show I saw like last year. And then, you know, I get into like I actually know what's happening from the music news part of the conversation, where I'm just like, oh, you know, well, you know, what did you think of that singer? How do you compare and all this? Right. And they're like, no, it was Jello. I'm like, it was not Jello. I'm like, yeah, Jello Biafra and the Dead Kennedys. Right. It's like, you know, Superman and the Justice League. Like, it, of course it was Jello Biafra and the Dead Kennedys. Right. And I'm like, no, man, like Jello has not played with them for a long, long time. If you saw them last year, that was not him. And they were just like, you know, it did not compute to them that the band that they were going to go see was not, you know, the band as they understood it. And they, you know, they were just going because as a kid, they were a fan of that. But they, you know, have spent the last 40 years not as a music obsessive, just as a, you know, person living their life in middle America or whatever. And they didn't know. So
don't you mean middle Canada? Maybe,
I was trying to be, trying to speak for the broader part of the audience, John, so they understand.
I was just wondering why you were at a party with a bunch of middle-class Americans. That's what I want to know.
I would totally go to parties with Americans.
Well, anyways, listen.
They're wonderful.
This Dead Kennedys demo is cool. I mean, to a degree, the new Dead Kennedys are kind of scraping. There's really not a whole lot of Dead Kennedys outtakes. There's basically no Dead Kennedys outtakes. They put out like the demo versions of not Plastic Surgery, is it? In God We Trust EP, which, why? I mean, it sounds almost just like the album, and it's pointless. However, this is cool. There are unreleased Dead Kennedys tracks. I've had a bootleg of this for a while. The song, actually, some of these songs are really, really good. I hope they clean it up, and I hope these songs have some punch, because the bootleg I have, the sound quality is very murky, but maybe the official release will sound much better. And which case I'm always a fan of a band doing tasteful archive releases of their material, because why not? I mean, I'm glad that we're able to appreciate and understand art to the greatest degree possible that we can. And so people might be saying, oh, this is a sellout. This is just for easy cash. Maybe it is, but at least they're doing it. It's like with the Ramones reissues. At least they're doing a nice, thoughtful job and releasing something that's worthwhile of being released instead of another greatest hits package. So I'm all for this.
So that this release is coming out on Black Friday Record Store Day, which is on November 23rd of this year. It's going to feature releases, of course, from the, like we just talked about, this Dead Kennedys one, but it's also going to have stuff from Devo and Alice Cooper, Tom Morello, Sublime, Unwritten Law, the UK Subs, Rage Against the Machine, Iggy and the Stooges, Joan Jett, and a ton more. So if you go to the go Google out the Record Store Day website, you can see the list now of what all of those releases are. John, you pour over this thing every year and pick out the stuff that you find interesting. Is there anything that's really going to make you go get in line?
Actually, this is one of the tastiest lists I've seen in years, Adam. There's a lot of exciting stuff on this one. And I go back and forth on Record Store Day. I've been a hater lately, but there's a lot of cool stuff on this. One of the coolest things is Worm. Adam, like, you know who Worm is?
I don't know who Worm is, John. Who's Worm?
Worm is Chuck Dukowski's heavy metal band from before, during, and after Black Flag. They released one album. It's called Feast. It's okay. It's not great, but it's okay. It's Chuck Dukowski. They're doing a mega deluxe reissue that is the entire album remastered and an entire second disc of outtakes, bonus tracks, and a couple of their singles or EPs. So it is basically an expertly curated collection. And that's the, I mean, no one's buying Worm albums except for like me and like seven other guys. So Record Store Day is the ideal day to release this. Another one of the extremely exciting things is that to release, well, they're releasing the Ramones live album off the latest box set, which is cool because I want to hear that, but I don't want to spend $90 for the box set. Of course, the record itself might be like $50, so I might just buy the box set. So, but anyways, it's a new Ramones live album that's on the box set that has them doing songs that they usually didn't do live before or afterwards. The other really, really exciting thing is the Alice Cooper thing. Alice Cooper reunited with the original Alice Cooper group about 4 years ago, and they played about an 8 or 9 song set in a garage, which of course it was kind of like a gimmick and a marketing thing, but they released 2 songs on a 7-inch about 2 Record Store Days ago, and it was amazing. Like it sounded like, I was really, really, really surprised about how great the band sounded. Like, it was wow, so good. The only problem was it was very limited, and I was lucky enough to get one, but it goes for like $70 on Discogs. This 12-inch record that they're releasing is the entire recording, not just the 2 songs, but all 8 songs, which is very exciting. But they're only making 3,000 of them, which sounds like a lot, but I think they made about 3,000 of the 7-inch, and it went super quick. Adam, I wish this was getting a full release, not just a Record Store Day release, but for me, this will be the golden ticket. I am very excited about this live Alice Cooper record. It's the Alice Cooper Band reunion, and they sound amazing. I did not make it to last Record Store Day, and I was able to pick up every single thing I wanted at market price, at store price. I guess that's market price. Oh, and the Dead Kennedys. I definitely want Dead Kennedys. I really, really want that. But I have a feeling we'll be able to get that quite easily going forth in the future. The Alice Cooper, not so much. Last Record Store Day, I was able to pick up everything I wanted on Discogs for like the store price. I'm worried about this Alice Cooper record, Adam. I want this record. And it might go quickly.
You'll have to fight all the other, super old people that are there trying to get it, John.
This might be another 5 a.m. morning for me, Adam. It really might be.
But see, these old people, they wake up at 5 a.m. Like, they've already done the crossword. So I don't know what you're going to do.
I'll do a bunch of math.
One of the releases on here. One of the releases that popped out on here that I thought was kind of interesting is there's a live record that's coming out that captures bands playing The Lookouting, which was a music festival that happened at 924 Gilman last year, where basically they brought all these classic Lookout Records bands, including the Winona Riders, who we just talked about, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So they brought all these classic Lookout Records bands out and had them play basically like a show celebrating that label's legacy. So this thing includes, let's see who's on here, like the Smugglers, Pansy Division, Squirt Gun, the Avengers,
Come on, the carnivores, I think, right?
Yeah, they're on here. Tilts. Record Store Day has written this track list as a paragraph, so it's just difficult to scan through. Anyways, that seems kind of cool to me. And it made me think, like, I want to see more of that. Like, you know, music festivals have become such a pivotal, you know, part of like the music landscape over the past few years. Like there's music festivals everywhere all the time. And you see like a lot of bands are doing nothing but like, you know, hopping from festival to festival all summer. You know, why aren't more of these festivals doing something where they're going to, you know, record the best of what's going on and then, you know, save it for posterity. That's kind of cool.
I wish we could have done that with Summer Soiree too, which we kind of tried, but it didn't come out too good, but it came out all right. But I why not record it? You know, that's awesome.
All right. So, John, why don't you play a song here for people, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about aliens.
Well, I will. Adam, do you want Stingin' Shaggy, the 7-inch Stingin' Shaggy?
I really don't want you to play a bunch of pop music on this episode.
I know, but do you want the Stingin' Shaggy 7-inch? I'm just asking.
Oh, you're asking me?
Yeah.
No, I don't need that.
So
what are you gonna play, John?
Well, I actually hadn't thought about it. I should probably play something new. I'm trying to think of a band that I've recently saw that was real cool. I will play a song by, let's see, who did I see this past week? Let's play a track by Pill. Yeah, let's play a Pill track. I want to play Pill. I should have thought about this beforehand, Adam. Let me think real quick. What band do I want? I'm trying to think of a smaller band that I've seen that was like real cool. Or new. I know. I'm going to play something by, I got a bunch of cool tapes recently. I'm really floundering here, Adam. Let me think.
You're just rambling, saying words, right?
Yeah, we should just go,
like, fuck it. This is the Monster Mash. Here you go. And just play. Come on, pick something. Pick a real song.
I'm thinking I want to play something like legit that's punk that I've seen recently that's like real cool.
People do not want you to play a 10-minute dub recording that you've done.
You can't always give the people what they want, Adam. Sometimes you have to give the people what they don't want. I will play a track by, let's see, have we played, we probably played a Nightbirds track, right, recently. I will play a track by, I'm going to play a track by, this band is actually pretty cool. This band is called Trash Knife. They're a Philadelphia band, and I'm going to play, they've got this song called Ronda Rousey, which is a tribute to the fighter Ronda Rousey, and I think this band's pretty cool, but what's telling about this is They were very mean to me once. This band, like I was at a show to see, I think, Shitty Friends was the band, and Trash Knife was opening, and I was like sitting there like on my own phone. Honestly, I was reading about Star Wars on my cell phone, and at the time the band was two girls and two guys, and the guys were like, are you reading about Star Wars? We love Star Wars, and they were totally like making fun of me. You know what I mean? And it really bummed me out. And you know what? Screw it. I'm not going to play it because they were dicks to me. Here's a track by a band that was nice to me. This is Dark Thoughts. Dark Thoughts is kind of like one of the buzzy Philadelphia bands right now. They're cool. They do kind of a Ramones cool kind of thing. This is Dark Thoughts. How about that, Adam? How about that?
Bye.
greatest song intro ever.
They were mean. I'm very conflicted about Trash Knife because I actually kind of liked them before I met them, and they were like
they have the best name.
They were total. The two guys were total dicks to me. I think one of the guys isn't in the band anymore. And I'm like, why is this guy being an asshole? Like, I don't even know this guy. Why is this guy being an asshole to me? You know, but the worst part is the music is pretty good, you know? So it's like, ah, you know, but whatever. Anyway, you who has not been an asshole to me, Adam, Dick Lucas of Culture Shock. He's been cool to me. Culture Shock is putting out a new album. Wait, I think somebody might have messed up on this article here. Oh, wait, no, never mind. Culture Shock's put out a new album. Culture Shock, of course, is the band by Dick Lucas from Between the Subhumans and Citizen Fish. They put out the reunion record a couple of years ago on Alternative Tentacles, 2 years ago. It was excellent. Culture Shock, actually, it's kind of a dick thing for me to say, but Culture Shock is probably my favorite Dick Lucas project because it's almost as hard as the Subhumans. And I like the Subhumans a lot, but every Subhuman song is kind of the same, except for like the really long ones, Cradle to the Grave. But even that sounds like the Subhumans. It's just really long. Citizen Fish is cool, but it's sometimes it gets a little too ska-y for me. For me, Culture Shock is the perfect middle ground. Plus, they have some weirder tracks, some dubby tracks, and just some straight-up punk tracks. Culture Shock is cool. They put out a live album last year, which was excellent. And I'm excited for the new Culture Shock album, Adam. I think in the U.S., almost nobody knows about Culture Shock.
No, they don't have the name recognition, even amongst that I feel like among punk news that, you know, any of Lucas' other bands would have. And I don't know why that is, but a lot of people talk about, you know, Citizen Fish, especially because they're looped into the whole Leftover Crack universe. You know, and a lot of people, you know, of course, talk about the Subhumans, but yeah, very, very little Culture Shock recognition.
Well, there you have it. Let's see. The new album is going to be called.
Yeah.
It's called The Humanity Show, and it came out 2 days ago, actually. Whoops. I need to get a hold of that because that is probably pretty good. Speaking of another thing that's really good, well, at least the overall project is really good. Adam, we've been talking about Effed Up on the podcast a lot, as we should. It is excellent. One thing, Adam, I got to say, man, I still feel bad about coming down on Damien 2 weeks ago. I took it back once. I'm going to take it back a second time, but that's it. I said I was kind of tired of Damien saying he wants to leave the band but not leaving the band. I don't want Damien to leave the band. Interesting tidbit, Adam, in one of the interviews there's a whole bunch of effed up interviews out there, and one of the interviews, Damien said that the reason why Glass Boys kind of felt kind of so-so was because Halichuk wanted to do this far out recording, but he wanted to do a back to the basics hardcore record. And honestly, like, that might bum a lot of people out, but like after Dose Your Dreams, which is amazing, I would love to hear Effed Up do a Rancid 5, Adam. Like, that would actually be really cool, wouldn't it?
I'm still just buzzing about this one. I don't even need to speculate about what they're going to do. There is actually a episode of Turned Out a Punk that came out today, with Mike actually interviewing Halichuk. I wish I wasn't recording this podcast so I could go listen to that one, because I'm totally fascinated to hear what they get into.
So along those lines, a Jade Hairpins 12-inch single came out. Jade Hairpins, of course, didn't exist at all, and then it cropped up as a B-side on Effed Up's High Rise 7-inch, and it was credited as a cover of Jade Hairpins. They just released a 12-inch single, and of course, on the Punk News Podcast, we love 12-inch singles. It's called Mother Man, and of course, Jade Hairpins almost definitely is Jonah Falco's side, New Order, you know, 80s alt goth-ish post-punk band, and I dig it. I have the 12-inch single, and both sides are really cool. It sounds a lot like New Order on it, maybe a little bit Depeche Mode, but it's real cool. I dig it, and I just we've talked about it before, but I just love how there's an entire universe of this new record with all these different associated records tied into it, which I think is a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's super cool. I mean, I wish that there was someone that was chronicling what they all are, because I feel like I must have missed some.
Well, here you go. So
you have Jade.
Let's run.
Yeah,
right,
so
down.
Here, so
here they are.
So
here.
You had the.
Oh, go ahead.
We're just gonna talk over each other. This is all Skype, by the way. This is all Skype's fault. you had your Razor Voice Joyce compilation that was released.
Did you get your copy yet? I didn't get my copy.
No, I didn't actually order it yet. So there's a Razor Voice Joyce compilation that they put together, which, as far as I can understand, has a bunch of real bands on it. At least that's what it seems to be.
I think it's got some fake ones.
Then you have, some of them seem to actually exist. They have Google evidence that they exist. But okay, so you have that. You have the Hardcore 7-inch that they just released that had a just impenetrable name. What was it?
Jellicoe and Woodbury.
Jellicoe and Woodbury, that had some amazing cover art by the what was his name? Japanese hardcore cover artist Sogo, was it? Anyways, the cover art to it is really cool. And then you had this, Jade Hairpin's single. Is there something else?
Yes, there are other releases. There's, of course, the High Rise 7-inch by Effed Up. There's the Raise Your Voice Joyce 7-inch by Effed Up. There's also a very rare Scottish compilation. I think there's literally only 50 copies, and it's called the Effed Up Scotch Tape, and it has some real bands on it, but I believe it also has some fake bands on it too. I haven't listened to it yet, but I'm almost sure that some of those fake bands are Effed Up.
Okay, but they haven't had like another single that they're not going to own up to yet. Like it's basically the Jellicoe and Woodbury one and this one.
Yeah,
that are out there
as alter egos. Okay. Yes.
All right. That's what I'm looking for. I want to know all the alter ego bands. I need someone to chronicle that for me because I feel like I'm going to miss one and then I'm going to talk about them and then someone's going to be like, "You're an idiot. That's just fucked up. You know that." And I'm going to feel bad. That would imply that I talk to people about music in real life. I don't. Just you, John.
We've got a special bond, Adam. I mean, Adam, you have.
You're the only person that I phone in the dark, in the middle of the night, during my week to talk about the Dead Kennedys.
Adam,
that is true.
Adam, do you have this frustration where like, you'll be at a show, you'll start talking to someone about a band or music, and like you just outclass them in every level when it comes to a topic, or you know what? And it's like it's difficult to have conversation with people because they don't have as much info as you do, and so like you can't really carry a conversation because they're on level B and you're on like level Z or level T. You know what I mean? Do you have that problem?
No, I have a different problem, which is that in the few times in a year where I am with a bunch of other people that are like legitimate music geeks for any extended period of time, they all start to try to out geek each other.
Oh yeah.
But when they do it, it's clear that like certain people are really into certain things, and they assume that everyone else is into that with the same amount. And I'm usually the one that's not. So then it comes up and I'm like John, you would have done great in this, but like I was somewhere where someone got into like a really detailed out there, like conversation about New Order. And I know essentially, you know, what you could fit on a playing card about New Order, not enough to be part of this conversation. I could have this conversation about other bands, but I don't know if you could. So it's very strange.
Yeah.
Bands that I might be able to have that conversation about would be Bad Religion. They were just released a new song. It is called The Profane Rights of Man. It follows up the Kids Are Alt-Right single that they released a month or two ago. And we assume that that song and this song are destined for some future Epitaph Records LP, but they haven't released that info yet. And I don't know too much about this yet because I've listened to it once, and I hate judging something on one song, especially if it's a band I like. So, or one listen. Did you listen to this much?
I did. I listened to it once, and it's Bad Religion doing the Bad Religion thing. You know, it's all right. It's all right. You know, I'm not a huge Bad Religion fan. I think it's okay. I'm glad Bad Religion is being political, especially as a punk band being political. But I feel as though they're preaching to the crowd to a degree. I'm not dissing them, but they're doing their thing. I feel as though they're somewhat preaching to the crowd, but also they're kind of just reiterating something that they've already expressed. So this isn't really changing anybody's way of thinking or anything like that, you know. But it, you know, I'm not trying to be a dick. It's all right.
Yeah, it clearly didn't blow me away enough that I want to get on here and rant and rave about it. But it seemed cool. It seemed fine. I have to go spend some time with it. John, now we're going to talk about aliens.
Yeah.
So, okay, so there was an article that ran at Ars Technica, which is a tech blog, about recent SEC filings that were submitted by To the Stars Academy of Arts and Sciences, Inc., which indicate that that corporation is deeply in debt. This is a quote, operating expenses and accumulated deficit have reached a staggering loss of $38 million as of June 2018. Now, if you've never heard of To the Stars Academy of Arts and Sciences, Inc., it's an organization that grew out of the guitar player and vocalist of Blink-182, Tom DeLonge. I guess ex-Blink-182, right? He's not in the band anymore.
Right.
He's not. He's the guy who's out. Thanks for clearing that, John. Yeah. Anyway, so... This grew out of Tom DeLonge's longstanding interest in UFO phenomenon, they have a big high floating mission statement, but basically they believe that there's aliens and UFOs, and we should get their tech so that we can, you know, improve humanity. So this has gone a little bit back and forth since we have posted this, in that DeLonge fired back at Ars Technica, claiming that the article was an error. Is that not correct?
Yes.
Let me see. I just saw this.
They actually,
John, have you been following this in deep detail? Or
do agree that they've actually added a due diligence section to their website in response to this, to show that they're not up to phony business, if you will.
So, are we just going to make fun of this thing, or is there a legitimate point to consider with regard to Tom's alien company?
Here's the legitimate point to this. I mean, I'm not opposed to people searching for aliens, but when you get into $35 million in debt and with other people's money, it's one of two things, honestly. Well, I guess it's one of three things. It's A, Tom DeLonge is running some kind of a scam and pocketing a whole bunch of money. I don't think that's happening here, but it's a possibility. B, some semi-famous or semi-famous person says, oh, I was really famous in this one field. I can be famous in any field. So they can automatically assume they know how to run a company that has $35 million in investments, which is a non-trifling. This is not $50,000 in investments, you know, between 10 people. This is $35 million, not even in investments, in debt, you know. So you really have to know how to run a business if you're going to manage a debt of that height, or assets that can accumulate a debt of that height or whatever. Or, and I don't mean, like, everyone's making fun of poor Tom. Do you think Tom's having a tough time? Like, do you think he's having, like, it really seems like he might not be doing well. You know what I mean? And it seems like – I'll draw a parallel to HR. Like HR, the bad brains. I don't know. This is just me guessing. I could be wrong. But like HR posts videos on his Facebook, and he just doesn't seem with it like at all. And like he just kind of rambles and talks about nothing. And it seems like there's nobody in his life. And I could be wrong, but it seems like there's nobody in his life to say, HR, you're not doing well. You need to get help, because you can't go on living like in this kind of altered reality – you know, removed from reality, kind of clueless, nonsensical speaking world that you're in. I feel as though maybe Tom DeLonge is in that world, and there's no one in his life that can say, Tom, instead of wasting $35 million on looking for aliens, you could either use that money for different reasons, or if you are going to start a giant business looking for aliens, then you shouldn't manage it so that you are in a position to get $35 million in debt.
Well, this all circles back to your initial conversation about Kanye too, right? Like he needs someone to I think Kanye's like,
I think with Kanye, there are parallels between Kanye and David Bowie in the mid 70s when Bowie was doing a ton of cocaine, and Bowie just said some weird things then, but he never truly like went nutso. And I think Kanye's either got a very bad drug problem or he's got real like mental problems, and I think he needs someone in his life to really help him out. I think he's in a bad spot, and I think maybe Tom DeLonge has been in that spot for a while. Is it inappropriate for me to I mean, I don't really know anything about him, so is it wrong for us to guess this? But, you know, he posts these rambling things on Facebook that make no sense. He's wasting $35 million on looking for aliens. Like, I feel like you could spend, like, $30 looking for aliens and get the same results. You get a telescope. You know what I mean? Like, what are you spending $35 million on looking for aliens for? Like what is there to buy or spend money on? Like, you either see green guys walking around or you don't, you know?
That is a staggering amount of money to lose on anything. I don't know if I should apply the same standard to Tom here that I was applying to the dead Kennedys, which is like, you know, if he's having fun, just do it.
At least they're not $35 million in debt, Adam. I'll give the dead Kennedys that. They are not $35 million in debt with other people's money.
Yeah. I don't know. Like this might just because he is the goofy guy from Blink-182, but I have a very hard time drumming up like the amount of empathy that I can for, I think, a lot of the other people that we talk about. This seems, I don't feel like he should be immune from people making fun of him for creating a company like this.
I go through this website. This website screams like fall, like not up to snuff, or just a bunch of whack jobs. Like if you read this website, it reads like a conspiracy theorist or like just crazy person's website. Like, it's got like random shit all over it, you know. It's got like all these different like badges. Like, we're part of this association, we're part of that association. Science, you know, brain computer interface, engineering the time, space time metric, consciousness. Like, what are you talking about? Like, you're just random buzzword. You know what I mean? Like, you're making a a 3D graph and just putting like Star Trek: The Next Generation like buzzwords into it. You know, it's like. What is this? I feel like this is the kind of thing that if you really dug into it to figure out what was going on, you get sucked into it and get brainwashed as well.
Yeah, one would think. I mean, I believe in a lot of cases there's a lot of things on the internet that are strange little secret societies that you can end up being sucked into. I don't know if I don't attribute that amount of competency to people that were in Blink-182 to have created the sinister cult-like underbelly. You know, I have a feeling that something like this is actually probably pretty shallow, and that they don't actually have, you know, a room full of scientists burning away $35 million. They probably have, you know, a place in a, you know, strip mall or an industrial park where they've paid for some signs. That's what I imagine. But
how do you waste $35 million doing that?
Cocaine.
Dr. Paul Rapp, brain function and consciousness consultant. Dr. Norman Kahn, national security and program management consultant.
Oh, okay. Then that's how you spend the money. Is you find people and you pay them to, you know, stick their name and endorsement on your website.
Man,
I could burn money that way.
We should become like advisors, Adam. You and I could be the internet access advisory council to them. How about that? How much should we ask for?
If we can get our slice of that slice of other people's money, I mean, $700,000.
They put all, the front page of this website is them posting how many investors they have. Like, that's weird too, you know. 2,547 investors. Like, why would you post that unless you're trying to scam people? I don't know, man.
It's it is a hard thing again to drum up a whole ton of sympathy with. Like, I've sympathy for Kanye because dude seems like he's got he's got some troubles that he's trying to work through. I can't have sympathy for the space alien organization. Just can't, John. Should we play a final song for the people?
Yes.
All right. Is this coming from your end or from my end?
We could actually. I remember the song that I wanted to play before we started the podcast. We could both play a song.
Ooh. Yeah. Okay. Sure. Let's do that.
Okay. My song went first last week, so I'll let you have first dibs this week, and then I'll play after that. How about that?
All right. If anyone wants to send us an email, podcast@punknews.org is how you do that. Please don't send email about how I did most of this episode on drugs, because I'm just as sorry as you need me to be. So this is a song from Toronto's Luge. They have an upcoming album called Tall Is Just a Feeling. The song is called Head Boy. Luge are weird. They're a super strange live band. They're playing this like this twitchy, off-kilter art punk that is a lot of a lot of strange noises and things that are not a conventional rock song, but you know, using the instruments of a conventional rock band. And they counter that with some like genuinely really super poppy moments. And this song that I'm going to play, which is called Head Boy, it is that to a T. It is super discordant and strange. And at the start, it's just honking at you and making, you know, odd little syncopated moments. And then the middle of the song is just like a great piece of pop. And then it ends with more chaos. So this is cool. I'm really looking forward to this band's record when it comes out. So this is Luge from Toronto. John, what are you playing?
Well, first of all, Tom DeLonge, I think, might get even less sympathy. I'm reading about this. He's the majority stockholder, a shareholder, and you can buy shares directly from the company, which probably come directly from him. So, like, you're just giving Tom DeLonge money by buying shares in this company.
I hate that song.
Listen, so Peter Hook, Adam White was talking about New Order and just jogged my memory. I was listening to the CD today, and I'm like, oh, I'll put this in the podcast. I totally forgot. Peter Hook, he was the bassist in Joy Division and New Order. And right now, he's not in New Order. He got kicked out. He hates New Order. New Order hates him. If you go see New Order live now, I think it's kind of lame. It's very gentle. It's very, you know, like, la, 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 we're New Order. Meanwhile, Peter Hook has been kind of counter-striking, and he's been playing all the Joy Division and all the New Order albums chronologically, except for instead of doing them kind of like pretty and frilly, he does them like hard, all basically no electronics or very few electronics, live band. And he's put out a whole bunch of live albums, which some people might say it's exploitative, but I think it's awesome because I've seen him live, and like he does like all the – Adam, did you just snore at me?
No.
Oh.
Do you have did a skunk get in your house or something?
Maybe.
Maybe look at this.
So anyway, Peter Hook, he's been doing all these Joy Division albums live and all these New Order albums live. And you could say, well, it's kind of cheesy for just the bass player to be, you know, going on tour. But, I mean, I don't know, man. It's awesome. It sounds awesome. And he's doing a whole bunch of songs that New Order is the same 14 songs every single time. Meanwhile, Peter Hook is up to like song like number 120 or something in this current like stage of his career, like playing them live. They sound really great, and he's been putting out a whole slew of live CDs. Some of them are more rare than others. I would say unless you're an Ultra fan, just get the easy to get $12 ones because they sound great. So this is off Peter Hook doing the Joy Division Unknown Pleasures album. This is a live track from that. I don't know which I'm going to play, but I'm going to play one of them. You should go see Peter Hook live. He's awesome live. And if you see these live albums, these CDs on the shelves, pick them up because they're like super great and like super fast and super punk rock. Check it out.
Seen everything. I'm head boy. lights for one. I can see all the cold facts. I can see through your eyes. All this talk made no contact. No matter how hard we try. Walls. I slid into your man traps with no hearing at all. I can see contradiction. Got to give up the fight. Just to live in your past tense and make believe you were right. I'm a sucker for a beautiful lady.
Adam, we're back. This was a long episode.
We are?
Oh, are we
I thought we were done.
All right, we're cutting it off then. Cut. I'll cut it off after Pete Hook.